This is Bear With Us Podcast.
Can we add girl? I mean, we aren't all manly like you.
Okay. How's this? This is Bear With Us Girl.
No. More like girl. Like a glitter bear.
This is Bear With Us Girl.
Perfect. This is Bear With Us Girl, where we stir the honey pot with hot topics, body issues, the adult industry,
fashion, news, pop culture, pup culture, and more.
From the bear perspective.
For and by the community.
I can barely stand it. Get it?
You're unbearable.
Never gets old.
Even on the holidays, it's still just as magical.
Oh, we are heading into the holidays. I'm scared of the holidays for so many reasons. Number one, you know, you get all of these invites for Christmas party, and if you go to one friend's and you have to go to them all, but then it's also all the food.
I mean, just be like me and be antisocial and you get no invites.
Come on. I mean, if I invited you to a Christmas party, you wouldn't come?
No.
Are you serious?
I don't. Parties like that give me anxiety. It's just so many people all at once. Bright lights, strangers, I can't handle that.
That is so funny to me.
I get really shy real quick, but also, right here, and you understand this, I'm not a fan of small talk.
I hate small talk.
We understand that. Ubers, haircut places,
mm-hmm. Hate it.
And if I go to that party, somebody's going to ask me a question like, how was your day?
Yeah.
And you will see me go into a blind rage of, I don't want to talk about this.
Well, in L.A., it's always like, you know, especially because I'm usually the chubbiest person in the room. It's like West Hollywood Christmas party. It's like, oh, yeah, he's in that cute suspender outfit or sexy Santa or whatever. And then it's like, what do you do? And then you say what you do. And like, oh, hi. I hate that when that switches, when they're like, oh, you could write an article about me or I could be on a podcast or something.
I mean, that's also offensive if somebody comes up to you and goes, oh, are you a sexy Santa? You're like, I'm just wearing red.
It's like, this is just me. But we are heading, this is our Thanksgiving episode. So
gobble,
we're bringing
gobble.
It to you. Gobble, gobble. Gravy and all. What do you do for Thanksgiving, being an introvert? Do you go to your families?
No. So actually, my mother is coming out.
She is.
She's coming out, so I'm taking her to dinner. We're going to go to dinner in Beverly Hills.
Ooh, she.
And then we're going to spend the weekend. We're going to go to Disneyland for the first time in like 10 years.
That is amazing. Now you have to hide all of your bedroom cameras.
No, I mean, she knows about what I do for filming, so, and there's no room to hide. Like, I have the lighting equipment everywhere.
Oh my God.
It's not like I have dildos sitting out and everything.
I've seen your videos. Yes, you do. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm going to just warn you about having your Thanksgiving dinner in Beverly Hills. It's going to be very small portions, and it's going to be very she. It's like pumpkin with a side of monkey brains, and it's not going to be like Thanksgiving.
No, but I mean, the thing is, like, she's coming out to visit, like, L.A. She's from South Carolina.
Oh, so
like,
it could be the whole experience.
She wants to experience, like, she wants to be like, ooh, it's Beverly Hills because it is small.
Yeah.
And I got to pay a lot for a little. Like, that's excitement. So, yeah. Like, it's what she wants, and I get it. It'll make her happy.
Now, what kind of Thanksgiving did you have, like, growing up? Did you have, like, big family, or was it just you and your mom?
No, like, so we've never really done big Thanksgivings. Like, my family was just not a very family-oriented family. Mm-hmm. Like, so it was never large groups and gatherings. It would always just be, like, our family. And I love my parents, but, like, they weren't exactly the best of chefs. So it was one of those things, like, they would make the turkey, but, like, as a kid, you would just not look forward to it because you were just like, I'm about to have to eat this dry-ass beast. And the only thing I looked forward to was eating the Pillsbury Doughboy croissants.
Teddy Bear, I cannot believe what you just said, because that is my experience to a T. We would do the family with family members that we didn't really care about, mm-hmm. and the food was always crap because nobody in our family knows how to cook, but the only delight was that goddamn Pillsbury in a can.
Ugh.
But I would be so afraid when it pops, so I would have to like run out of the room when they were going to pop the canister.
Actually, I was the same way too.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
But about maybe 5 years ago, my mom and I decided we're done pretending. We're done spending a great day with people that we don't care about, and we're done pretending that we can cook, and none of us enjoy the food. So my mom and I are spending it just us together, and last year we got it from Marie Callender's, where they just do it all for you. So we still eat at home, but we'll watch like Star Trek movies, or we'll go to the movies.
Aww.
Or we'll do something ridiculous, you know, that's so unconventional. That's just, I think one Thanksgiving we had McDonald's, and it was like the most fun meal that we've ever had.
I mean, honestly, that's how Thanksgiving should be spent, because like, first off, we've all now learned, like, it's a messed up holiday.
Yeah.
That you're celebrating.
That's, well,
and
that's true.
And then they always try and say, like, well, it's a day that you should be grateful for. I'm like, first off, you can be grateful any day.
Yeah, and you should be.
So I'm like, at this point, just treat it as a day, like, it's a day where you get to chill and eat food you like. Stop putting these rules, archaic rules, for a holiday that is already archaic to begin with. And just, like, do what you do. If you want to eat McDonald's and watch Star Trek all day, do that. That's something to be grateful for.
Because you're going to remember that and you're going to enjoy the day. But my mom was asking, what are they teaching in schools about Thanksgiving?
I mean, that depends on what state you live in.
Well, true. But, like, growing up, we all were in the school plays where you were the Pilgrims and the Indians.
Mm-hmm. Those very problematic plays by you have your white teacher going, like, patting her mouth. And
Well, and that video went viral. I don't even know what happened to that teacher.
That woman that was doing that, first off, she wasn't a history teacher. She was a math teacher teaching them trigonometry, and somehow she decided she had to do a tomahawk dance and pretend she's an Indian to teach them about triangles.
Oh my god. Oh my god. What happened to her?
I hope that she was fired, but based on where it probably happened, it was probably one of those things like she got a slap on the wrist. But it happened in a class where one of the students actually is Native American.
That just gives me the chills. Anyway, I hope the school systems have... I mean, I'm never going to have kids, so, you know, but. Anyway, this is our Thanksgiving, but we do have, if you are cooking, we do have our guest today, Jonathan Bardsdig, who knows a thing or two about Thanksgiving. So we're chatting with him today. But the show is brought to you by Cybersocket.com, the ultimate resource for gay erotica, now newly designed after 25 years strong. Visit Cybersocket for adult star exclusive interviews, movie reviews with free clips, fun contributions from people from the adult film world, event listings, and their very popular top five columns featuring advice for the bedroom. Go to cybersocket.com.
We are also excited to be a media partner for Bear World Magazine. Bear World Magazine is now 9 years old and is the only lifestyle magazine celebrating the global bear community in all its glorious, diverse beauty. If you have not done so already, head over to bearworldmag.com to check out the great Barry content and also sign up for the Woof Report, their new weekly newsletter packed with Barry news and gossip.
Now, the Woof Report, like I know in Scruff, it's woof, but a bear doesn't woof.
Bears woof. We woof, growl.
Have you ever heard a bear woof?
In person, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you go woof. It's more, honestly, I'd say bears are more of like an woof, like a woof.
How did we take over the term woof? Because when a straight guy looks at a girl and she walks by and they'll be like, woof. Like, oh God, she's such a dog.
Well, I mean,
how did we take it over?
Straight guys catcall, but I think their catcalls are more like, hey, bitch, or like, they're more offensive.
I don't think a straight guy is saying, hey, bitch.
That's his way to flirt with them. Hey there, prostitute.
So sexy. Anyway, let's introduce our guest of honor. Jonathan Bardsdig is a storyteller, cook, author, and a television personality based in Washington, D.C. He believes that life can and should be lived with joy each day and shares that joy through food and stories with audiences from local farmers markets to television, where he is the host of a new 8-episode series, Jonathan's Kitchens, Seasons to Taste, airing on Reverie. He's a popular keynote speaker. He's appeared on the TEDx stage, and his professional culinary career began in, over a decade ago, with weekly cooking demonstrations at DC's historic Eastern Market. And since then, he has made more than 900 live appearances at venues across the country, including the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the National Geographic Museum, as well as countless virtual events for both corporate clients and private clients alike. He is self-trained, by the way, with more than 20 years of experience in the kitchen. His food is inspired by the seasonal, local ingredients he grew up with and that you can find today at today's farmers markets. He has written 3 cookbooks, Simple Summer, A Recipe for Joy and Connection, Fresh and Magical Vinaigrettes, so fancy, and Seasons to Taste, Farm Fresh Joy for Kitchen and Table, which is the inspiration for his new television series. Please welcome Jonathan.
Now, I feel like he's probably not making Pillsbury Doughboy croissants.
He probably got into Hives back then. Number one, I have to comment on your background. It looks like you're on the set of like a Food Network.
Like Top Chef.
Yes, exactly. Is that your actual kitchen or is that just for Zoom?
This is our home kitchen.
Oh, wow. I thought it was a Zoom background too. I thought it was fake.
It's 100% real. So this is what you're doing day to day.
This is where I cook. And this has sort of been my studio for the last 3 years now. It's where we filmed Seasons to Taste, Jonathan's Kitchen. It's where I've been filming local network TV appearances and all the virtual content that I've done over the last 2 years.
And I have to say, like, being a chef, and I don't know if it's like being an adult star at home, like, your partner just assumes, like, you're going to wake up and make, a three-course omelet breakfast every day, and then for lunch you're going to have, like, Gruyere grilled cheese or something. Is that what's expected of you? Or, like, what are you eating on a daily basis?
I have to say, in the last few months, things have been so hectic that it's a little too much takeout, but I do almost 99% of my shopping at local farm markets. So our fridge is packed right now with fresh seasonal ingredients, a lot of kale and broccoli and cauliflower, local, all the vinegars and oils that you see on the shelf behind me. So we eat mostly the food that I talk about cooking.
God, I envy you. I wish I had a friend that could cook. I wish I lived near somebody that can cook. Mm-hmm. I am one of the worst cooks you will ever meet in your life. You will get food poisoning. I will catch something on fire. And I'm not going to stop.
Now, have you tried to do like a cooking class or anything? Or you're just like, resign, I'm a bad cook?
I'm one of those people that I don't like to read directions. I don't like to be told what to do. I like to be perfect at it instantly. So I'm going to try the most complicated dish ever with no directions.
Like Beef Wellington.
None of the ingredients, not even the meat somehow, and it is going to come out.
You know, we were talking about growing up. I would try to do recipes as a kid because just trying to improve the food in the house. But we would always be missing something. And when you're a kid, you don't know that, hey, those ingredients are there for a reason. If it's like 2 tablespoons of something, you think, oh, you don't really need it. The worst food ever. My poor mom, she'd come home from work trying to eat this crap, and it was just...
Did I ever tell you about when the first time I tried to make cookies as an adult and I was missing sugar? So I substituted sugar with Pepsi.
What? Oh, because it had a sugar content in it?
Because I looked at the ingredients, I was like, well, it says like 52 grams of sugar, so
oh my God.
This is sugar.
Oh, my God.
You can't make cookies with sugar.
No.
I mean, with Pepsi.
Yeah. There was one Thanksgiving, I was making dessert, and I was making the pumpkin cheesecake, and I had been drinking all day with my ex, and I forgot to put the eggs in. Oh, my God. It was.
Oh, that. You need that there.
Yeah. Jonathan, we start the show off with a hot topic, and we are going to be talking about Thanksgiving Day recipes and cooking for the holidays. But this is a little hot topic that has to deal with Thanksgiving. Dealing with problematic family members around Thanksgiving. You know, family members have said things to us in the past, sometimes politically, especially now. The hot topic is, do you forgive and forget? Do you sit next to somebody that has voted against your rights? Do you just suck it up for the day, or what do you do?
You know, I look at this topic the same way that I would look at tradition, right? Holidays are such a time period of traditions, and traditions are a great way of preserving and celebrating our history and the people in our lives. They can also preserve things that are toxic. And I think that it is okay to take care of ourselves. So if that person has truly hurt you and that relationship is not reparable, then no, I don't think you need to sit next to them. I think that there's civility, right? There is the other thing that I feel is someone else's bad behavior doesn't change who you are. So if you are a generous and welcoming person, you can continue to be a generous and welcoming person, but set boundaries, protect your space.
I've had friends that don't do family Thanksgiving because of what one aunt said, or there's one uncle that's mm-hmm. like a Trumper, which I kind of get because you don't want to be hypocritical and share the environment, but then you're also taking it out on the rest of the family by not being there.
I mean, it's hard for me to always understand this because, like I told you, I don't really have a close-knit family.
Yeah.
So I never understand that dynamic of where people are like, well, we have to all get together for the family. I'm like, if there's one of you that's awful, I'm just not going to show up. Mm. But I understand that. I'm sure it's different for people that are close to their family where you're like, I don't want to let the one just ruin all that I do love.
I mean, we're always given the mainstream version of like family holidays as some big happy affair. Any person that I've dated that has come from a big family, or even friends from a big family, there's always drama, and it's always like a responsibility. It's never like an absolute joy.
So I'm not missing out by not having
it. So I will tell you, my mom is one of 7. So
oh my God.
Kid,
so you, oh my
like,
God.
Right. Thanksgiving was 40 people. And we all like each other. I mean, there are a few of those problematic spouses of relatives, but of aunts and uncles, but generally we all really liked each other, and all the shadiness sort of happened off record. There was always someone who brought a dish that everyone didn't think should be there. One of the challenges, I think, coming into a big family is there's so much history that it's really hard coming in. And so, you know, someone is doing a great thing, bringing a new dish to share, and everyone's like, ooh, we haven't eaten that in the last 40 years. What is this doing here?
Like, wait, that Jell-O cocktail
thing? I was about to say, I was like, or is that like a family member passive-aggressively trying to one-up? We're like, I know so-and-so is going to bring pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
Well, look, I'm going to make it too, but make it better.
Pumpkin pecan pie.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It was pretty well-regulated who did what.
Well,
which has become a great tradition, right? You always think, I mean, one of the things that I talk about with food, and I think in the last 2 years with so many of us really kind of being locked up alone at home, is that dishes that have been traditionally cooked by someone can serve to make you feel more connected when you're at the table. So there's a Jell-O mold that I've significantly adapted, but it always reminds me of my godmother, who was responsible for bringing it every year.
Yeah, so there are good family members.
I mean, I got to ask this. Does anybody like Jell-O molds?
Yeah, who started this and who was eating it?
I'm like, who is asking for, I understand it's history, but who is asking for that to be repeated?
So I kind of love this dish. In fact, we're going to be putting it out in my e-newsletter next week, and so it'll be going up on my blog tonight. It started as a cranberry mold. So it was
Jell-O,
a can of crushed pineapple, some walnuts, and canned cranberries. And when I read this recipe, I thought, this is not really how I cook anymore. So at the time, my brother was working for the Wonderful Company, who are behind Palm Wonderful Pomegranate Juice. And I decided to use that and gelatin to make a pomegranate Jell-O with fresh cranberries, local harvested black walnuts that I toast up so nice and nutty with some pomegranate arils in there. And it's a darn good dish.
Well, and I have to say, the Jell-O really hit its peak, like I think in the 50s, because there was no calorie-free type food. Like the conversations we're having now about healthy food, that just wasn't the case. And so housewives knew that Jell-O was lower calorie, and it was a way to have dessert without the decadence.
You knew what Jell-O is made of.
Like horse hooves, right?
Cow hooves.
Cow hooves? Well, I mean, I eat the rest of the part of the cow, so it's like, why am I gonna stop at the hooves? Yeah. Now, Jonathan, coming out, or what was your coming out experience in such a big family?
So I came out to my dad for the second time at 18 years old. I came out very briefly at 13.
Oh my God, that's very young.
Directly saying essentially that I was having sexual fantasies about men.
Oh.
On the way home from Sunday school, which was on Monday nights at this point. And 2 weeks later, when he asked again, I somehow figured out I should not have shared that. So I said, oh no, that's passed.
You're like, I was
so
just joking.
Again, freshman year in college. And again, my mom is very close with her family. So about 2 or 3 weeks later, all the brothers and sisters got together for dinner, and she told them all. So over the course of about a month, my entire family knew and were incredibly accepting. In fact, we had... I think we had 165 people at our wedding, which was hosted at my family's home.
Wow.
Now, did you do the catering for your own wedding?
I did not, but I did do the flowers.
Okay.
God, you are just super gay. I'm going to cook and do flowers. You know, it's funny, talking about coming out, I came out for Thanksgiving because I was from college and I had broken up with somebody that I was seeing, and we were making food, and I just burst into tears because I was so
gay.
The food was terrible too, so I was crying about that. And then I just blurted it out. It's like, why do we choose the holidays to come out, most of us?
I don't know. I mean, I told you I lost my virginity on Christmas Eve.
So, I didn't know it was on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I lost my virginity and I
ho, ho, ho.
I don't know what I think it. You're right. Like, there's just something. It's about, I guess, just ideas of tradition. You start to think about, like, well, I want to have a tradition of being my authentic self.
Oh.
And I think that's why you have those moments where that tends to be it. Because you just start to, you reflect on so much, and then that's going to come up if you're having it hidden deep down there.
Do we think it's also that the joy of the holidays is kind of ease over any
sadness? I think also, holidays are very honestly a sad time for many people.
Yeah,
because it's a reminder of, like, you see, like, families, you see couples, you see this, and if you are in the closet, you start to think like, well, I want to be able to have a partner at a holiday, and I can't. And I think that may be why there's a lot of coming out then, because you just see so much about family and it reminds you of it.
Jonathan, what was the first time when you brought like a boyfriend home to this huge family? Were you nervous?
I wasn't. So the first time when I was 31 years old, I had a pretty serious illness that left me nearly paralyzed for about 6 weeks.
Oh my God.
And I had been dating someone for a short period of time, and I was in the hospital most of the time up near my family's home in Western Massachusetts. And he came to visit from DC. So to put this in perspective, I was on a work trip in Hawaii when this happened and had to check myself into the hospital there, called home and said, yeah, I'm in the hospital, you know, call with some updates. And my sister, who was in residency at the time, checked around and found out that this illness could end up with some end of life decisions involved if it went wrong.
Jesus Christ.
So my mom flew down, and the first thing she did walking in the room was tell me how bad my breath was, because I could not brush my teeth for like 3 days at this point.
You're like, thanks.
And she goes in my Dob kit in my suitcase and pulls out, you know, the giant bottle of lube, and said, what's this? And I said, she put that back and grabbed the toothbrush and the toothpaste. So by that point, having a boyfriend come home, I'd been through so much worse.
Now, Jonathan, just not to get, you know, deep and dark, but how did you kind of work through that illness? What do you contribute your driving force to kind of emerge from that?
I think a lot of it is just attitude. And I think that's a lot of life, right? Is getting up every day and assuming that things will get better, that there is going to be a solution out there. Finding moments of joy, and let's face it, a lot of life for a lot of people is hard. And I certainly recognize I have a good life, and that life is a lot harder for a lot of people than it is for me. But I still think finding those moments of joy is so important in maintaining the energy to get out there and keep going.
Teddy, where do you find your daily inspiration?
Maybe be more specific. Like, what? Like, why do I wake up in the morning?
Or... Yeah, like, what? Like, you know, I'm going to be successful and I'm going to keep going through any obstacles.
I mean, I would say, like, I don't know if I've told you, like, I have a life coach who I work with, and I practice mindfulness meditation. So I try every morning to, as soon as I wake up, I literally sit for 15 minutes in silence. And that's what helped me.
I don't know if I could do that. You know, I'm such a loud mouth, and I always have to have music going on.
But exactly. If you're somebody that you can't do that, that means you need it even more.
Well, girl.
But I was like, we're getting a little bit deep here. That's a different podcast where we dive into you and your issues.
No, but we should have a spirituality kind of chat, though. At some point.
We should have my life coach on, because he's also gay.
Let's do it. Jonathan, how did you get into cooking? Were you like in the kitchen as a kid? And you know, you're self-taught, which is amazing. You have this huge career and you're like, yeah, I did it myself.
Yeah. I grew up in the kitchen. I lucked out. My mom is a wonderful cook, and her great joy in life was being a mother and a homemaker. So we always had amazing food. I grew up in the 70s, which was sort of the first wave of the health food movement in the US. So I find talking to people my age that you either were eating a whole lot of packaged, processed, and prepared foods, or there were these small pockets where you were eating all of this great, local, healthy, organic food. And that was our house. So I loved getting in the kitchen. My mom and I would cook special desserts together every year around Valentine's Day. And I really fell in love with cooking for the first time, I think, as an adult. Right after graduating from college, I went to a dinner party with an older gay couple I had met over the summer, and watched them make this super hip and trendy pasta sauce, portobello mushrooms, plum tomatoes, capers, fresh basil, and realized walking out of the party, I had learned how to make this. And it just gave me this sense of power that I could do this thing. And so I started making it for anyone who would let me. I spent that spring living at home and was suddenly not with 1,500 of my best friends at college.
Yeah.
So I started cooking dinner every Tuesday night, and by the third week, I was spending hours menu planning and shopping and preparing these meals. And it just went from there.
Wait, so what were you in college for? I thought you said you were self-taught.
I went to college for performing arts.
Oh, okay. Wow, this is a very big change.
Well, yes and no, because you've made performance and like live appearances. I've seen your live appearances. I've seen your TEDx talks, and there is that performance element to what you do. It's as much a performance for the camera as it is to what you're actually doing.
I mean, but if you're also self-taught, I want to ask you this. What would you say to somebody that is an aspiring chef? Do you think they need to go to school? Because, I mean, you didn't go to school and you're very successful.
I think it depends on the career that you want. So I am not a restaurant chef, and that is a different skill set, right? I am talking to people about cooking at home. Mm-hmm. I have cooked on a different scale. I've catered a few weddings in the 150 person range. I am, you know, I'm regularly cooking for decent sized audiences, but when I think about a chef, a professional chef, you are managing inventory and time and budgets and people, and that is a different skill set. And so I think getting some of that experience quickly through an education makes a lot of sense. I think it really depends on where you want to take that. For me, being self-taught made sense because from the beginning I could say to people, look, I know maybe a little bit more than you do, but I've learned it the same way. So if I can do this, you can do this.
I really think that that's part of the attraction that a lot of your fans have. Like, you know, I love watching your segments. I love reading your recipes. Not that I'm going to go do it. But the possibility is that I could, because you grew up in the kitchen being a normal person, not like in this fancy school and with all these fancy terms and all that. You are you're kind of encouraging the common man or the common person, so to speak, to become this great chef. And the potential is there. What would you say to somebody like,
I was like,
Teddy and I?
Do you think there's hope for me? I mean,
where should we start?
Mind you, like, I'm also the kind of chef who there is a lot of fires. I now actually bought from Amazon a fire extinguisher to keep next to my oven.
It's because you're so hairy. Like, the fire's just waiting to burn something.
Oh, I've burnt myself with oil before because, like, I also, like, I like to walk around naked in my apartment. So I've cooked before, and I've learned oil and nudity don't mix well together.
I've had those moments.
Yeah.
So you mentioned tackling the most complicated, difficult thing that you could right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And I took over cooking Christmas dinner from my mom when I was probably 21 years old.
Oh my
so
God.
With this huge family, by 21, my immediate family would get together on Christmas Day. And 2 days later, all 40 people would be over and she'd cook again. And by 21 years old, when I was 21, she wasn't having fun with this. So I said, at least let me take over Christmas Day. And I decided to do Beef Wellington and Baked Alaska.
Oh, my God.
Like, I'm not a chef, and I'm even well aware those are difficult dishes.
Very difficult.
So the first year went poorly. I finally opened up the recipe at 11:30 at night on Christmas Eve to discover that Beef Wellington starts with a 24-hour mm-hmm. marinade mm-hmm. for the beef.
Yeah.
And without a lot of experience and a whole lot of confidence at that point, I thought, I got this. I also went ahead and made the ice cream and the sponge cake from scratch for the Baked
God.
Alaska.
God.
So fast forward, 11:30 Christmas night, we finally sit down to the table. My family's irate. And at 12:30, I bring out the Baked Alaska. Now, I usually, when you serve it, you flame some alcohol over the top.
Yep.
And I had never done this before.
Oh, no.
Well, it turns out it helps if you warm it up first. I didn't. So I ended up pouring an entire bottle of cherry brandy over the Baked Alaska with none of it burning off. By the end of dessert, everyone's asleep except for my 11-year-old brother, who's completely trapped. So I say, I'm going to cook this same meal next year. And for some reason, they say yes. So going swimmingly, 8:30 at night, Beef Wellington hits the table. 9:30 out comes the Baked Alaska. I've warmed up the cherry brandy. Drop in a match, blue flames, perfect, poured over the top, dim the lights, absolutely magic. And there's still a little more alcohol in the pan, so I pour some over the top. Norman Rockwell should have been in my family's dining room capturing this magical moment. And there's still some more alcohol, so I pour it over the top, and that's the moment where the flames leapt right over the edge of the tray that the Baked Alaska was sitting on and set the dining room table on fire.
You just got so cocky, you're right to the finish line, and you just tripped over yourself.
Yeah, that's like a Christmas vacation or something.
So the good news is, I mean,
how many
you come back,
how many family members
anything,
did you lose
right?
that day? And that's how we lost Grandma.
Yeah, and his wig caught on fire. Jonathan, what was the transition from enjoying making food at home and for your family? What was the transition to saying, okay, now I'm going to kind of make a career out of this?
So I was listening to Teddy talk about having a coach. I was 37 years old and had sort of checked all of those before you turned 40 boxes. So happily married, living on Capitol Hill, beautiful neighborhood in D.C., work was going well, and I thought, what's the next adventure? And started working with a professional coach, which through a number of conversations led to the idea of getting up one Saturday morning and doing a live cooking demonstration in front of an audience. And 6 to 10 weeks in, I was hooked and knew it was heading somewhere. And I think in my third year went full time.
You know, I'm addicted to watching Food Network. I love watching Food Network all the time, which is ironic because, you know, I literally keep shoes in my refrigerator because I need the space. And, wow. And there's, you know, nothing happening. But I still notice Food Network is still very, it's very much a straight man's, like, the chefs we see highlighted are, you know, Bobby Flay.
Which is weird because then if you go to Netflix and you watch, it's all about the British Baking Show, that is very gay-friendly
show.
It is
it's so super gay. Do you feel it's still a straight, and I'm not just talking about straight men, too. I'm talking about the female chefs as well. You know, we will have one kind of personality. But do you think it's still a very straight-centric kind of on-camera food industry?
I think it is. I think it's changing. I think we're starting to see some really great attention paid to a diverse group of voices and from all different sort of cultural and life experiences. So I think that's changing. You know, when I started, so this was 10 years ago last July, it was early on in the whole gay marriage conversation. And at the time, one of the conversations was, can we get gay marriage, but we don't get to call it that, right? We don't get husband and wife and all those, that terminology.
Right.
So I get started my first week and I'm telling stories while I'm cooking. And most of them about the people that I cook for. And the person I cook for most often is my husband, Jason. And I'm sitting there thinking, is he my husband in this story? Is he my roommate? Is he my partner? Oh. And 3 weeks in, I had this moment where I thought, you know what, storytelling is about kind of shutting off your brain and opening your heart and just letting it come out. And if I was spending all my time wondering, what did I call Jason in the last story and what do I call him in this one, I was never going to be a very good storyteller. So from there forward, I just thought, you know what, if someone is not going to want to be my fan, they don't want to be part of my community because I'm gay, then we should be clear with each other up front about that and avoid the frustration on both sides.
Amen.
What's funny, because you've been on a lot of live, you know, like morning shows, and we know that they still, to this day, even though they're covering a lot of topics from our community, it's still a very conservative market because the people that are watching morning shows are from, you know, they're the housewives or they're the more that are at home able to watch these kind of shows. Do you feel being an openly gay chef, do you think it's hindered your career in any way?
I don't. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm sure that someone has decided that they didn't want to work with me because of this. One of the beautiful things that I think self-publishing, right, whether that is blogs or the podcast you guys are doing today, social media, is that we don't have to reach the entire world to be incredibly successful in our careers.
That's very true.
And, right. And so I think that it's really empowering to know that you can let go. If someone decides that they don't want me on Food Network, there are 100 other platforms I can go launch a TV show on.
I always tell people that being a niche market is so much smarter. Like, saying, like, if you try to get everybody happy, you're not going to make everybody happy.
Right.
If you instead decide, I'm going to just be 100% me, and the only people that like me actually like me, that's so much easier because, one, you're not going to be tired because you're not trying to please everybody. And two, those people are going to really support you because they actually like you.
They're going to be loyal.
Yes.
But let's, you know, self-published. I mean, you put out a great product too. I mean, we all have friends who put out their own products and we're like, girl, go back to bed. You're not, mm-hmm. you're not ready yet. Where do you get these recipes from? Because like I said, they're very accessible, but they also reflect kind of your overall personality. But they're recipes I would expect somebody that went to cooking school and things like that. So where have you gathered this kind of library?
When I first started doing live cooking demonstrations, I was doing 4 recipes a week. And the second and third weeks I was doing these, I noticed that I was seeing a lot of the same people. So I knew I needed new dishes every single week to keep them entertained. And we started doing my husband, some friends, started getting together once a week and developing those 4 recipes in a virtual test kitchen that I would demonstrate every Saturday. And as soon as I finished my demo, I'd go pick up the fresh ingredients from the market that I'd be using the next weekend, go home and get started again. So in my first 4 years, I developed something like 700 recipes.
Oh my God. I have a really important question. Do we think the Barefoot Contessa's husband is gay? Every episode, she's cooking this meal for somebody that only comes home one day out of the week. Slim fit jeans.
I mean, I would say that's the Barefoot Contessa.
Ah!
that's what your next show should be.
Yeah,
Barefoot.
I'd rather watch that than. Well. Yeah. Anyway, but I do want to talk about the bear community. You know, there's this whole discussion of being, you know, bigger and we're, you know, into body positivity. For people that have made comments against the bear community or bigger people, they say, you know, it's just about health. And here's the thing about your recipes is there is a very healthy aspect to your recipes. There are fresh ingredients. It's not like, oh, since I'm a bigger guy, everything's going to be this junk food kind of environment.
It's not Paula Deen's deep fried butter. Like, right. It's actual food.
But there is, what's your take on it, on body positivity versus healthy eating versus, you know, being part of the bear community and being big and proud?
I think the first thing about food being healthy is that it's pretty simple, right? The more plant-based, fresh, whole ingredients that you are working with and the fewer processed, prepared, and packaged ingredients that you're working with, the healthier your meals are likely to be. Beyond that, I've made some changes in my diet as it's been necessary for health. And every single time I've said, I do this for a living. I cannot be cooking and eating food that I won't stand up in front of an audience and admit to.
Right.
And so the number one thing I always say is every single meal is going to bring me joy. I'm going to be excited about it. And that's not been a problem. I love a lot of veggies. The other thing I think is it's about sustainability, right? So if you're going to eat a healthy diet, and I'll get to healthy in a second, I think it's got to be something that you can get excited to get up and eat day after day after day. 6 weeks doesn't cut it. That's mm-hmm. not a lifetime.
Yep. Right.
So in terms of healthy, I think one of the challenges in the bear community, it's a challenge that I have struggled with personally, is that health is wrapped up in 2 different things. I think a lot of us found the bear community because of lack of acceptance or outright rejection from other parts of the gay community.
100%.
And a lot of us found that much earlier than we found the gay community, right? Mm. We grew up being called fat in the school playground. We grew up being told by our parents that we needed to lose weight, that we didn't look the way we needed to.
In gym class, it was always apparent, you know, who the chubby kids were. Yep.
So we carry a lot of trauma into this, and I recognize that it's hard, and I talk about it with a lot of compassion because I understand the struggle, but health means a lot of different things, and some of the things it means is that we have the energy to go to the Great Bear pool party in the summer. And wear that Speedo and celebrate the body that we have.
Right,
but it means that we do it without shortening our life, without being short of breath and needing to sleep at random times. So and I also say that in the context of a healthy diet isn't healthy if it is not mentally healthy, if it compromises our mental health. And so we need to pay attention to that too. This is all in balance.
I think you said the perfect word, and this applies to everybody in every single aspect of your life. It's about balance.
Yeah.
And like Just like if you're out of balance by having too much unhealthy food is just as bad as somebody who's like, I'm not going to let myself eat anything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's also your relationship to food. So, you know, growing up, I said my mom was a terrible cook. She was also working three jobs to put me through private school and dance lessons and all that. So the time that we had together was usually getting fast food because it was easy. It tastes good. And then we could sit and actually have a meal and, you know, and talk to each other at the end of a busy day. So growing up, I associated fast food with that comfort feeling. It wasn't just about the fast. So I was eating fast food all the time because I had pleasurable memories because it was about the bond I had with my mom.
Your brain was synced up to this is love because you literally learned this is when I get to connect to my mom.
That's exactly right. And also, you know, we had some years where, you know, money was not happening. So when we were able to have a big meal or order that extra cheeseburger with fast food, it's because we were celebrating that we had money in the bank. And so more meant more rather than, no, you don't have to eat all of that in one sitting just because you can.
Yeah.
Well, and let's face it, when we talk about healthy food, we usually talk about it in these ridiculous absolutes.
Yeah.
And that cheeseburger is going to win out every single time over some sauteed kale with a spray of cooking spray and a splash of lemon juice over the top. I don't want to eat that.
Yeah.
Right. So you take that dish and you put in some really good olive oil and a few red pepper flakes and a good healthy pinch of salt. So it tastes good. That I want to eat. That can compete with the takeout cheeseburger for me. It's why at the end of the day, this stuff has to taste good. It has to spark joy. It has to make you feel good. I think it's also so important that it bring us together. Because for me, the joy of food at home, and this is what differentiates it from a restaurant experience, is that the experience of the food isn't the sum total of the joy that you get out of food at home. So if you've had fun going shopping and you've shared some time in the kitchen with someone you like, or you hung out in the kitchen with a glass of wine, your favorite music playing, and then you sat down at the table and had a great conversation with people who you love, it doesn't matter quite so much how good the food is at that point, because there's so many other things you're taking away.
You know, we're talking about Thanksgiving and cooking. You have something that's really, really fun. You do a Thanksgiving helpline. That's the Sunday through Wednesday before Thanksgiving. You answer questions through Facebook and Instagram, which I think is so fun and it's so great. But what are some of the biggest cooking mistakes people make that they're like, it's an emergency that they're reaching out to you?
Yeah, like what are they calling in and asking? Like, save
my
life. I
always get asked about turkey and food safety. The can you put the stuffing in the turkey question comes up. Yes, you can. You just need to be a little more cautious around it. I get asked a lot about last minute side dishes. Here's my sort of two core pieces of advice for Thanksgiving are, first, think of it like a restaurant. And I know I'm a home cook and I'm not trained, so why am I saying that? Well, most of us cooking at home are used to putting a main and two sides on the table, right? And if you're a good home cook, you get really good at doing that. Thanksgiving dinner is all of these dishes with a limited kitchen, right? You don't have 15 burners and three ovens to work with, most of us. And you're trying to get them all out at the same time. So if you're in a restaurant kitchen, you actually design your menu not only around what you think is going to be popular, but what you have the equipment to cook. Mm-hmm. So if 80% of your menu is happening on a griddle and you have a fryer sitting unused most of the time, you have a poorly designed menu. So make sure that you have some things that don't need to be heated up, some things that you're cooking on the stovetop, and some things that are cooking in the oven, so you're using all of your equipment well. Number two is, I'm Teddy, you mentioned that you hate following directions. I do too. I don't cook from a recipe unless I absolutely have to, or I really, really want to learn something that I have no experience with. But when you were putting 12 side dishes out, along with probably the biggest piece of protein you will cook in a year, that takes some planning. Putting together a to-do list, an hourly to-do list for the day, makes sense. The other piece of advice is relax. By the time you get everyone to the table and you've all shared what you're thankful for, you've woken the person up on the couch who had a few too many drinks pre-gaming Thanksgiving dinner, the food's all going to be lukewarm anyway, so don't get too stressed about it.
I mean, I think that's the best advice, too, because also at a certain point, everybody's so hungry. They're like, they don't care if you just put a can of olives in front of them. They're going to eat, they're going to eat it.
Yeah. Well, it's about setting expectations, too. I remember going to my uncle's house, and his wife was an awful cook, and she said, you know, lunch was going to, we're going to do it at 1 p.m. It was 3:30 before we even got an appetizer. And it's like, no, bitch. Like, we're hungry. You said one, like, mean one.
Now, have you ever had people call in asking about deep frying a turkey?
Oh, yeah.
Because where I grew up, we always, every year, would have somebody usually either die or catch on fire because of it.
I get asked about it all the time, and that is definitely comes down to safety and doing it outdoors, because that's just an opportunity to make a mistake.
Yeah, that's usually how the fires happen, because they're usually done indoors with somebody with a gallon of oil cooking and not being shocked when their whole house catches on fire, and they do too.
Now, how does a deep-fried turkey taste different? Is it just the skin that's different? Or like
it's so good.
But like, what makes it so good? Is it juicier?
It's just fat.
I mean, deep frying is a great way of cooking, and if you do it at the right temperature, it is not greasy. So what happens is the oil heats up, the fat heats up, and the fat itself becomes the cooking surface. Mm. So just like in a saute pan, it is the pan itself that is hot, that the food is cooking up against and browning up against. In deep frying, it is the oil that reaches that same temperature that your pan would, and cooks the ingredients. So it gives you beautifully crispy skin. It does lock in some moisture and a really even cooking temperature.
Jonathan, we take our listener questions, and we got this question specifically for this episode. Andrew from email asks, at family holidays, I'm usually left to hang out with the women and do kitchen stuff, probably because I'm the gay one. Why can't I hang out with the men? What do I do?
Ditch the kitchen. Let me share. There is this great tradition I heard about from someone who was in an event of mine a few years ago. She said that she comes from a huge family, and there's so many people and so much work, from taking care of kids to peeling potatoes to setting the table, that they divide it up every single year. The one thing that they do is they pull a name out of a hat, and that person becomes the Thanksgiving queen. And they get a stash and a crown.
Yes, girl.
And they get to just sit in a chair all day, and everyone has to do whatever they want them to. Bring them drinks, bring them food.
I love that.
She even said that her grandfather, the sort of patriarch of the family, was the Christmas queen one year and loved it. So I start a new tradition and be the Christmas queen, and you can hang out with whoever you want to hang out with.
I love that.
I do understand that energy, though, because I've often been lumped with the women, you know, at family stuff, because it is that assumption you're gay, you're going to get along well, better with the women, which...
I was like, but is it a lie?
No, I mean, it does, but I also like football, and we know, you know, Thanksgiving's a great day to watch football. So I think my advice would be you just go where you want to go, and you sit yourself down and make yourself at home. It's your holiday, too. You're not there for anybody else.
Well, that's my also advice, too. Like, the families, you can also go home. So if your family is awful at a certain point, you can be like, I'm an adult. I can just walk on and be like, bye.
Yeah. Or I could see who's on Grindr.
Like, I can buy my own damn turkey at home.
Ready made, by the way.
Like, Marie Callender's is still good shit. Like, let's be real.
We're getting our Thanksgiving this year from Whole Foods. And because they've changed up a lot of recipes. So it's like a coconut curry sweet potato. I'm like, yeah, let's put a spin on this.
That actually sounds good.
It does sound good. I think we're just going to do that and the turkey.
And so we have one more question. We got this email to us from Caesar. He says, I tend to binge eat during the holidays, then diet in January. I always feel guilty, though, and gross by the time New Year's Eve rolls around. But I love holiday food. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I did a great interview with a local nutritionist and health coach here in D.C., Allison Tepper, at the beginning of COVID, beginning of lockdown. And said, you know, I'm already eating more comfort food. I'm stressed out. Talk to me about your advice. And she said, think a little longer term about your happiness. So she said, by all means, eat for comfort. But think about what that comfort encompasses. And as Caesar said, at the holidays, overeating starts to be uncomfortable, right? You don't feel good anymore. You're jacked on sugar and carbs all the time. Yeah. You feel weighted down, your clothes start getting a little tight. So think in balance about, yeah, I want to eat that cookie, so go ahead and eat it. If it's only around that time of year, absolutely enjoy it. If you don't, you're going to be bitter and angry all the time, and you'll be binging on something else because you didn't give yourself a little of this, so you had a lot of that. But when you eat that cookie, think, you know what? One's going to feel good. Two drinks tonight are going to feel good. A hangover tomorrow morning and you know, my shirt tugging because I've put on 15 pounds, that's not going to feel good. And so think of both sides of that.
Well, and like I've even seen like heard scientific stuff about how your brain processes food. Like eat what you want in a small portion. In 20 minutes, your brain's going to tell you, "Hey, you're done. That's all you needed." But it's that instant, like shoving five cookies in your face at once. Well,
actually, so what I've learned too is that more often than not, when you're eating, or especially if you're overeating, you're actually just thirsty for water.
Yeah, I've heard that
and
too.
And literally, because your body knows I can at least get moisture out of this. So I'm going to make myself do it. So if you drink a glass of water before you decide to eat something, you're not going to usually overeat because you're...
Yeah, but a glass of water doesn't taste as good as a chocolate chip cookie.
No, but you can still have both. Just drink the glass of water first, and then you're not going to have 20 cookies. You're going to have 5.
Yeah. I mean, I really feel this question because every holiday, I always lose 10 pounds before I go into Thanksgiving, knowing that Thanksgiving to Christmas, I'm going to put those 10 pounds back, and I'll be back. But this COVID, it's not a joke. Like, I just it happened during COVID and I can't get rid of it. And now I'm going into the holidays. I'm scared because I love holiday cookies. I love holiday food. It's that comfort. It's, you know, my mom and I bonding time.
Well, just don't try and replace the cookies with cookie substitutes that, you know, use sugar alcohol. Have you ever used that?
Like, no,
it's the sugar substitute. Oh, that will make you bloated and gassy.
Oh, girl.
The other thing that I would say that I find, and this is not a diet strategy, but I find that it helps balance my eating, is, again, being social, being in conversation. When you're sitting around the table having, have you ever, you know, sat down to catch up with old friends and it's your turn to share, and all of a sudden everyone else is done with their meal and you've only taken two bites because you've been so busy talking. So get in conversation. And that slows you down a little bit. It doesn't keep you from eating, but it may get you eating an amount that feels good to you.
So his advice to you is talk more?
I know. To me, it's like, oh my God, I'm gonna be Calista Flockhart by the end of the holidays. Jonathan, it's been such a joy for you to join us for our Thanksgiving episode. Can you tell our audience where you want them to find you and follow you?
Absolutely. So check me out on Instagram at Jonathan Bardzik. Sunday through Wednesday, hit me up with any question that you have about Thanksgiving and follow me through the year to see what's going on in the kitchen. You can find recipes and my cookbooks on my website, jonathanbardzik.com. And I would love for you to check out my brand new TV series, Jonathan's Kitchen, Seasons to Taste, including a really great Thanksgiving episode. And you can find that on Revry, R-E-V-R-Y.
Awesome.
I love that so much. And again, to our audience, you can send us your questions as well at bearwithusgirl@gmail.com. And that's a U and three R's.
And make sure to show us some love. We are growing this podcast. So comment, rate, subscribe. All of our links are on bearwithusgirl.com. That's a U and three R's.
And Teddy Bear, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Teddy Bear Gurr.
You can find me on Instagram at AlexanderIsOnAir. And I'm going to message you about some dessert stuff because we're actually going to keep the dessert as homemade. So I love that you're going to be available to your fans. I can imagine you have some pretty funny requests coming in. So thank you for making yourself available like that, by the way.
Absolutely. And Alexander and Teddy, thank you so much for sharing this time. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Gobble, gobble. And until next time.
That has been another episode of Bear With Us, Girl, presented by Bear World Magazine and Cybersocket.com.
Please take a moment to like, subscribe, comment, rate, all the love and support you can give, guys.
Questions, comments, and suggestions? Email us at bearwithusgirl3rs@gmail.com.
Until next time. Embrace the fur.
Grrr.